This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
I think I came down on the side with John Rahm. I think it was the right decision. I think you have to have him withdraw. I don't think you can have a competitor in an event who has tested positive that you just say, okay, we're gonna look the other way, or we'll just tell you to stay far away from everyone. I think there's too much liability involved in it. You start making exceptions like that, and I think it does become difficult, but I felt bad for him because it does seem like that was a situation where you could have a safe workaround for everybody. It is Danny and Gallant. It's time for us at 8 o'clock to bring in Brock Huard. A week away makes the heart grow fonder for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, half back, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
New phone, who dis?
What up, dog?
Good to have you back, Brock. How you doing, man?
Been too long. Yeah, been too long. Oof. Hope I'm not too rusty today. Lots to do, lots to get to today. Had a good week up in Alaska. Captain Tom, the outdoor line. Tom just doing Tom things up there, just getting lots of fish. The last day, Danny, we were chatting a little bit off the air right before I popped on. The last day, we're in the last 2 hours, man. It's the last dance. And we needed a couple kings because we went out and got our halibut. It was super rough, so we kind of tucked into a cove. And, man, sure enough, this gray whale is over in the kelp beds just playing. These eagles are up there like commentators just chirping. And bam, bam, get two just beautiful kings in the final couple hours of the trip. So that put the old cherry on the top, the old outdoor line delivering again.
Outdoor Brock. Love it. Question one. Now that we know how much he cost, did the Seahawks miss out not trading for Julio Jones, a second and fourth round pick ultimately? That's what Tennessee sends to Atlanta.
Yeah. And $15 million of salary, right? So True. You're going to inherit that. And let's see if he passes his physical. I will be kind of very curious about that. And that is the one area, I think, where the Seahawks, by and large, not 100% hit rate, and it never is for anybody, but they've been pretty good as far as Jadeveon Clowney, case example number one of knowing the health of guys, projecting that health the best they can. Luke Jokel was maybe a little bit of a miss, but I think that was more talent than it was even that bulky knee. But I'm going to be curious here how much Tennessee is able to dig in. If they ask him for an MRI, to take MRIs of those hamstrings that have cost him so many games over the last couple years. And, Paul, I think you wrote, I believe you wrote, that you wouldn't have made the move for Julio and pulled the trigger. I wouldn't
Paul was
have,
out.
I wouldn't have as well.
Really?
I think this is going to be a situation next year, and I may eat some humble pie, and you could serve it to me, you know, with a little whipped cream on top of it. But I don't think Julio is going to play 10-plus games next year. I just don't. And in the lack of experience depth in your receiving core, like, I don't want to spend $15 million of that. Let's see during training camp who gets cut around the league. Let's see if there's still another veteran out there. I believe Golden Tate's still sitting out there, right? I think there's ways to do that better than spending that kind of dough, that kind of draft capital. And, oh, by the way, yeah, it's a second, a fourth. You give up next year's second. Do you know what you have in your draft? You have no one, you have no two, and you have no four.
Optimal.
That's not great. I had it backwards. I thought that the picks were going into the reverse order, that Atlanta was giving up a fourth and getting a sixth. But you're right. It is. They're giving up a fourth. They're getting a sixth. It would have gutted your draft. Are you relieved he's not in the division?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't think I would have loved to have tried to match up with him. But you do get to see him week two.
Yeah.
He and AJ come to Seattle, I believe, week number two. And week number two, he's probably still healthy. So he will be a difficult animal. And you know, based on his comments, both when he was on speakerphone, and then even furthermore, talking about wanting a guy that can really throw it and give him deep ball opportunities, a little shot at Matt Ryan, maybe justifiable because Matt's not that guy anymore. But B, I think a lot of people pointed and said, great, come play with Russ, best deep ball thrower in the game. So That'll be one I think we'll all have a close eye on and watch his intensity in that game against this team that I think more than likely he would have loved to have come to. But it's a cost, not even in draft capital, but in that $15 million that I would not have pulled that trigger either.
Question two. All right, Brock. To the relief of everyone, Russell Wilson touched down in Seattle last night. We got the video footage. He's expected to be at OTAs this week. Better late than never? What do you make of this?
Yeah, I'd say about time, to be honest with you. So he'll have this week of OTAs and then mandatory minicamp next week, and that's it. I mean, an entire offseason. Now, he's been in communication, and lots of it, with the OC and teammates and head coach. And I'm sure guys have come down there. We've seen videos of that, and there's probably been even more of that, of guys that have traveled his way that, you know, work out here for a week, do all of that. But, man, I'm the son of a coach, and this will never change. This will never, ever change, and it's my life experience. And on top of it, it was even playing with the son of a Hall of Famer in Peyton Manning, who cherished those reps. You don't get many of them. Training camp is not what it used to be. You don't get many opportunities. You know, that's why Pete so covets the offseason as well, is they script out the entire 6 months from April, May, June, July into August, September. Like, hey, man, here's the number of reps we have, and this is what we've lost. Right, this is what we've not had with a new system, with all the pieces and all the cylinders firing. And, you know, I'd put Bobby Wagner there too. You know, I know he's been in it. I know he knows it inside and out. But he's got a young linebacker that's going to start next to him. He's got new pieces at corner. He's got new pieces up front. Like, I just don't think you ever get those reps back. So I would say hashtag bout time.
There may have been a move of solidarity where it's the whole team doing it and something involving the players' union and maybe some frustration over the fact that they added the 17th game. But I'm with you on that front, Brock, and there is a part of me that sees that Russell Wilson clearly sees value in these OTAs. Otherwise, why would he show up for the last week? So why not just show up for the first?
Yeah.
Is he trying to do something here? Do you think that he's trying to send a message?
Yeah, I mean, those were two guys that were pretty outspoken that I'm sure voted no on the CBA. They didn't want that. Right. And we'd heard some rumblings of that. And so, yeah, this is the upper crust gets to make these kind of decisions, man. When you're guaranteed 30 some million and 18 million, guess what you get to do? You get to have a little bit of leverage. But I'll say it again. I think one of the reasons that Colts team won 12 games a year, and I was around it for two of them, was Marvin never missed an OTA. Edra never missed an OTA. Nobody missed an OTA because number 1-8 wouldn't think of missing an OTA and missing that kind of work and that opportunity to get together with all the new faces and all the new pieces, let alone, as I said, an entirely new system where the language is changing, where it is, as Tyler Lockett said, more complex than those in the past, the systems in the past. So, you're never going to get... It's never going to get me to change my opinion on that, man. It is a time-on-task job. Sports radio, time-on-task. Firefighting, time-on-task. Broadcaster, time-on-task. Attorney litigating, time-on-task. Football player, new system, time-on-task. And skipping OTAs, just never a big fan of it.
You know, Brock, you've known me well enough. I'm usually the laissez-faire. Hey. Don't.
Yep. You and Graz. You and the Graz, father. Yes, sir.
You know what, man? This one changed for me. And I think it's because of what Russell said in February, where I was like, I can't reconcile the guy with, hey, I want to do more. I want to have more input. I'm not happy with the protection that I've gotten. We need to have a sense of urgency. Yep. I couldn't reconcile that with the, no, man, I'm getting ready on my own. And I trust him. I do know he gets ready. But that's a decision. It's like, hey, I know what I need as a player. Like, okay, if you're going to take that,
decision, that
approach.
Danny, right? That decision was what? It's about me. I'm in the greatest shape of my life. Great.
Yep.
That's wonderful. But this is not a me game. This is a we game. And that's exactly what you tried to argue to Dan Patrick. Right? It's a we game. It's not a me game. Spending my own time getting in the greatest shape of my life. It's getting and elevating everybody around you because all eyes are on you. You are the franchise. You are the amazing player. You are the one that your little slot receiver can't wait to see in person and actually work with. Right, you are the one that the new lineman, the new coordinator, and everybody has got to work with. So, yeah, this is a tough one. It was interesting. I was listening to a little snippet. I don't know if you guys talked about this last week around the Julio Jones of Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, and Daniel Jeremiah characterized this Seahawks season, this offseason, this move and he characterized it as the last dance.
Ooh, yeah.
The Chicago Bulls, Phil Jackson, we all watched the 10-part series. They all knew, and for DJ, he would have pulled the trigger because in his mind, Julio's contract runs out when Russell's runs out. And we got 2 years, and you know what? If we make this move, we'll have no draft capital, but we'll got 2 years to try to win a Super Bowl with Pete and Russ, and then, you know, we'll break it down and deconstruct it then. So it was, I hadn't kind of framed it or thought of it that way, but even this move in some ways, it's like, yeah, man, I'm going to take care of me. I'm going to make sure I'm in the greatest shape of my life. I'm going to make sure I do everything that I can possibly do, but I is not in TEAM.
Question three. Let's shift to talk about another frustrating thing for Seattle sports fans. Jared Kelnick, Brock, has been 0 for his last 38 at the plate. He did not play in yesterday's Mariners game.
Paul's fault.
He is blaming me, Brock. Danny is blaming me because I feel a good athlete should be able to be put into the fire, and he is not going to be ruined by some slump.
No. I'm blaming you and people like you for the, why isn't he up here last year? Was he that much worse than anybody else you could have trotted out here?
Because
they batted 200. He's batting 098. You happy now? You've opened it. You've had us open our Christmas
I'm
present.
I'm happy that I get to see
ruined.
The present. Yes, I'm happy that I get to see the
ruined.
Present, Danny. Whatever.
Ruined.
And so here's my question, Brock. Is it truly possible to ruin an athlete by putting them in too soon? Because if they're good, shouldn't they be good? Maybe not at first, but eventually?
Ooh, that's a good debate. That's longer than probably a few minutes. So I think we and you guys can dig into that, and probably a great one with your audience as well. And there's probably cases on both sides. Troy Aikman was 1-15 and threw how many interceptions? Peyton Manning.
Steve Walsh was going to take his job.
Peyton Manning threw 29 picks his rookie year, thrown right into the fire. You know, the most of any NFL rookie, I believe. Just a disaster, right? Just some struggles, but. You know, they had the fortitude, they had the team build around them, a totally different game. You could point to, I'm sure, through 83 at-bats, lots of major leaguers. Mike Trout didn't start well. A-Rod didn't start well. Now, did they start at 096? In a slash of 096, 185, 183? Maybe not that bad. You know, I think, you know, I'll raise my hand. I was like, man, I can't wait to see this kid.
I can't wait to see him either.
Fernando Tatis, by the way. I looked this up. He and Fernando are only 6 months apart. You know that? Tatis has been playing for 2 years, two and a half years. And they're 6 months apart in birth. Jared will turn 22 in July. And Tatis, 22 in January. Fernando's first 83 at-bats in the bigs. 301, 366, 590.
Ugh.
956.
Yeah, awesome, ATS. Brock. Thanks. Wow, that little ray of sunshine. That's awesome.
At 19. And Jared right now is OPS of 378. Can you ruin him? You can ruin guys. Yeah, I think you can ruin guys. Is this guy have the personality, the makeup, the physicality, the gifting, and all of that stuff to be ruined? I don't think so. I think he's very gifted. But I'll also say this, Danny and Paul, and just your honest, transparent feeling. I'm pretty shocked that he's just a dead pole hitter. As good an athlete as he is.
Oh, you thought he'd spray more?
As fast as he is, as dynamic as he is, why are you Kyle Seager? Let me just try to be a pole hitter. Spray the freaking ball all over the field and run like the wind. One of the fastest players in the big leagues. And, you know, I was like, oh, interesting. You know, first series team in the team they were facing, right? That opening series already shifting against him. I'm like, man, that's weird. I mean, how much quantitative data was there? There was AAA, I guess, you know, coming up in high school. But how do they know to shift it? Well, because that's all he's trying to do. Spray the ball, my man. Go and run. Go and run like the wind because we see that you can. So, man, I hope to see a little bit of evolution of that. And it's not just, man, I'm going to try to hit 30, 40 bombs because I'm unbelievably strong and just pull everything out of the yard.
If you were that yoked, would you try to pull everything out of the yard? I think I would.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
No, man.
But you could also, if you miss, right? And if you just have a middle to op, like, oh, gosh. It's just.
Put the ball in play.
Yes.
Brock.
Yes.
Can you say the word ruin for me?
Ruined. I know I say ruined.
You ruined.
I say
I've never noticed that before.
I know.
Ruined.
I screwed that up. Ruined. Ruined. It's like that H-O-R-R-O-R word that I also am very careful to say. Because sometimes
an absolute horror show?
Multi-syllabic. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Brock was in a meeting once, and speaking of development time and an idea of can you ruin someone, Brock was in a meeting at one point where there was a discussion about having me on the radio program when I worked with Brock. Do more of the leading of the show, the ins and the outs. And the producer on the show at the time was basically saying, I don't think Danny's not ready to do that. And the response that he got from the radio consultant who was hired was, well, how are you going to know unless you try? And the producer's response was, well, by that rationale, shouldn't we just go find somebody under 405 and see if they can do it? Just bring in someone off the street? Do you remember that, Brock?
I do, and I think that comment ruined you as much as or maybe it just ruined our relationship, you know. Not you and me, but the whole little setup there.
Brock,
yeah, I'm curious. I know you guys talk to Jerry and Scott, and they see infinitely more than we ever do, right? I mean, the level of detail, the attention to detail, everything that they see, just to my little simpleton mind, I would just love to see that athlete, that amazing, dynamic dude, put the ball in play. Just put the ball in play and go run. That's it.
Brock, we're grateful to have you back. We'll look forward to
talking
to you.
You never ruin our day.
See you, boys.
That is Brock Heward for Blue 42. You brought up the question in the first hour, Paul. We do treat baseball players differently, right?
Yeah.
Like we don't do this. Kobe Bryant did not get a situation where, hey, okay, you get 3 years of apprenticeship before you take on a starring role. I mean, he's jacking up three-pointers as a rookie against the Utah Jazz, even though he's throwing up air balls. It happens less and less in football, right? Sometimes you'll see a quarterback that'll spend a full year on the bench, but even then, that's almost different. That's learning the offense and the situation. It's different in baseball where there are a series of hurdles that you must eclipse. There are a series of tasks you must demonstrate mastery of before we progress you on to the next level. It's treated much more like a video game with a boss at the end of each level that you have to surpass to get through than other sports.
Well, you're going, though, from a mini boss at that AAA level, like the one that you go through halfway through the level, to the big one at the end, like the final boss, when you're going to the major leagues. Like, there's a big gap in between. So, honestly, I mean, to get better, say you're playing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Don't you want to go up against Mike Tyson as many times as possible so you can figure out how to actually beat him? I would want to go up and
Tyson?
No, I haven't. I've never played the game, but I know that you have to go up all and fight everybody, and then you finally get to Tyson at the end. And that idea of fighting all the way up to get to Tyson at the end and all of a sudden say I don't even get there, like, I want to go up against Tyson over and over and over and over again until I can eventually beat him. And I think that should be what
that would
we
be
would
an exceptionally bad
Kelnick.
Approach.
Why?
That would be an exceptionally bad approach because Mike Tyson could knock you out with one punch.
In the
and
video
you
game.
Got a slight flash. I love that game. I played. I beat the brakes off of that game on Nintendo. You had to work up to it. You couldn't beat Tyson if you couldn't beat his name was it Razor Ruddock? Or that might have been an actual boxer.
What happens?
They had like if you couldn't beat the Macho Man, how are you going to handle against Mike Tyson? Like Mike Tyson, your eyes, you'd have to hold your eyes pried open to wait for the slash when he was about to hit you with the uppercut. And if he landed that, you were going down.
I get what you're saying.
You have to work up to that.
But you work up to it. When you finally get to face him, okay, I think Kelnick got to that point. And look, the struggles are real. He does not look good right now, and he probably should be sent down. But has he not had glimpses where he looked like he belonged? You could tell.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So if that's the case, it's fair to freak out right now. And this slump is awful and embarrassing. And I do feel for him because I imagine that this is a pretty difficult time finally facing challenges at a sport that he has dominated for his entire life. But we can't all of a sudden act as if like it's been ruined for him. I feel like this is just something he's going to have to get through. And I've seen this happen with young athletes before, specifically a young baseball player by the name of Alex Bregman. Throw all the cheating stuff to the side. He started off his career 2-for-38, okay? I mean, 0-for-38, 2-for-38, there is a difference. It's not the biggest difference, though. It's not the biggest. It's a long sample size, and eventually Bregman broke through that, and by the end of the year, by September, he was great. I specifically, but I think we all are generally overreactive when we see a young prospect come up and we are assuming right away that we are going to see things. But if there is a process of development, he still needs to be getting those major league at-bats, those major league reps, and I think he's eventually going to figure it out. You know, like, maybe this is a disaster, but I don't think right now, because of this 0-for-38 slump, we should be saying, oh, there's no way he's going to be able to salvage himself out of this. They brought him up too early. He's going to never, ever amount to the player that he could have been.
One of the things in baseball, and the reason I think you have so many different rungs of the development ladder, is because it's about learning to deal with failure, right? Like, that is a huge part of baseball. It's like, we talk about it in football all the time with cornerbacks. Cornerbacks have to have a short memory. Cornerbacks have to overlook that. Every baseball player has to basically be like that way. And not only that, but in baseball, your failures are so much more repeated. And a successful player, I mean, the whole, hey, a successful guy makes an out 70% of the time. And you have to learn to deal with that. And for someone like Kelnick, this is his first taste of that. And he is going to have to deal with that. And maybe what you're saying is right, Paul, that you push a prospect to the point of failure. That's generally how you develop a guy. And once he fails, then you kind of let him work his way through that, or you recalculate. But you push them to the point of failure. Experiencing failure is part of the point. And maybe for Kelnick, this is happening in his first extended stint on the biggest stage, but that nobody should be that, because failure is part of the process here, and he's going to have to learn to deal with this. And he's having to learn to deal with it right out of the chute, and it's more exaggerated, but one way or the other, he was going to get to this point.
Right, and I'd say sooner rather than later. I can understand the idea of saying, well, you don't want to rush him to the point where you bring him all the way up, but he had proven at those other levels that he at the very least knew what he was doing there. I don't think the challenge was as serious at that AAA level. So I'm all aboard bringing him up the way that they have and seeing what he can do the remainder of this year. But just like with Taylor Trammell, it's probably time to start thinking about giving him a little bit more mojo by sending him back down. He comes back up. Maybe the approach is different. He has a clean slate. He feels better about himself, refreshed. And then we get to see what we are hoping for from him this year.
It is Danny and Gallant. Julio Jones is headed to the other conference. He's going to the AFC South, where he'll join the Tennessee Titans. Jalen Ramsey was disappointed. Were Seahawks fans excited? Or did they feel a little bit of what the Rams' top cornerback's feeling? We'll tell you next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Julio Jones traded for, this is one of those, well, you have to remember how much veterans are worth in the NFL, right? Like, that's what, this is one of those kind of deals. Got to remember that veterans aren't always worth as much, because Julio Jones traded for a second round pick and then essentially some last half of the draft position swapping. Atlanta moves from the sixth to the fourth round of the 2023 draft. So it's not that much more than a second round pick that they gave up to get a guy who has arguably been the top receiver, or one of the top three receivers in the league over the past 10 years. He goes to the Titans, which makes a lot of sense. I'm going to read Jalen Ramsey's tweet. I'm going to have myself a good Sunday, but this is all it took for a generational guy, and we were, quote, out, end quote, of the Julio sweepstakes? Wow, we would have been unstoppable for real with all those weapons. Julio to the 615, which I believe is a reference because Jalen is from Nashville. So I think he's giving a shout out to his hometown city.
Though.
But
right.
Expressing sort of surprise at how little it took to acquire Jones.
Second round pick and a fourth round pick is not that much for a 32-year-old wide receiver who, yes, definitely has some miles on him, and you wonder about his hamstring going forward, but it's one of the best wide receivers we've ever seen. So I understand why a lot of players feel this way. I imagine there are some Seahawks that look at it the exact same way. They're thinking to themselves, that's it? It's probably happening in just about every single locker room across the NFL. Doesn't mean it's realistic for them to actually have made that trade, but I bet a lot of players are thinking this right now.
Yes, but this is why players are terrible GMs, right? Players love name recognition.
Yeah.
When it gets down to it, players love, and if you ask guys about what they feel about, they love to throw out compliments. They'll love to tell you why they should be paid as much or more as guys that are they perceive as peers. But something like this is going to bring out everybody. There's nobody that doesn't like Julio Jones.
Right.
Like, there's nobody that doesn't, or no player that thinks like, oh, we're going to be worse off with him. And if it's just money, what are we doing? But it kind of shows. And this has been something that has been true in the league for a long time, where a player's name recognition and the perceptions about their productivity outweighs what teams actually think they're worth. Because he's not going for all that much at all.
No.
I feel a little disappointment that Seattle's not getting him. But that's mostly related to kind of what Brock was talking about, that last dance idea of if you approach this as the end of your time and look at the final 3 years of Russell Wilson's contract as like, okay, let's go for broke here. I would say, yeah, I'm willing to stretch a little bit when it comes to Julio Jones.
I don't necessarily want to make this a last dance. I want Russell Wilson here as long as possible. Until he stops playing well, I want him to be the quarterback of this team.
Okay, I agree with you there. How do you plan for that as a team, though? Because I everything you just said, I agree. I want him here too. I don't want to. But if you're in charge of managing the Seattle Seahawks and your job is to sort of prepare for all alternatives, how do you navigate this? Do you assume that he's going to be here for the next 8 years?
I don't think you can make any assumptions. But I think that if you continue to play the long game, you're going to give yourself the best chance to be competitive every single season as long as he is the quarterback of your team. And that means that you're going to have chance after chance after chance to theoretically win the title, though some years you will be an actual contender and others you will be probably a fraud.
That's easier said than done, though, right? Like, it's easy to say that, but doing that. So let's take his contract, for example. You can renegotiate his contract right now. You don't even have to ask him about it. You have the ability to convert money from salary to bonus. You can defer salary cap cost. If you do that, you create more spending room right now, but you kick more of his cap charges down the road. And that impacts the team in this way. If you get to a situation where you're either being asked to trade him or want to trade him, convince him to be traded, it makes it more expensive for you. You're going to have more dead cap money. So do you renegotiate his contract right now? We know all the variables here. He was kind of a pain in the butt in February. It seems like things have settled down since then, but we had the moment where the four teams were given. You know all of the backstory of this offseason, and you know what he's done so far. Do you change his contract and essentially make yourself more committed to him long term?
By doing the restructure, or
yeah,
offering
do you restructure
a new
it?
Deal entirely separate?
No. I don't think anybody's going to do a new deal at this point. Do you restructure it? Do you create salary cap space today to accommodate the addition of someone like Julio Jones, or if you want Stephon Gilmore, or do you leave your options more open if you have to part ways with him before the end of his contract?
There is a part of me that is still looking so big picture, so long term, that I feel like if you do that, you are basically saying there is going to come a time where we have to start clipping a lot of people on this roster. And I don't want the Seahawks to get to that point, even if Russell Wilson's still under center. I feel like the way that they are playing it right now, where they are not doing the restructure, and they are still leaving their options open for next offseason and the offseason afterwards, while at the same time still being aggressive, I think that is the way to go about it. I really believe that you want this to happen as long as you possibly can. And if you are going to do that restructure, yeah, you might make it more of a commitment for Russell Wilson in the near future. But you are also, I think, basically setting yourself up for an eventual fall. And it's a lot closer than what it might be if you continue to operate in this way.
I agree with what Seattle's doing right now in not restructuring his deal, because I think it gives them the most options next season if this comes up again. I think that it creates not an out for you, but it makes it more that you can call any sort of perceived bluff. You say, okay, you're really this unhappy. Let's talk about ways that we can actually negotiate a deal and you can get to a place that you want and we'll get something in return. Philadelphia could have as many as 3 first round picks. Mm-hmm. I support what they're doing this way. If you want them to have the best long-term relationship with him, I think you'd advocate for restructuring his deal. I think you'd advocate for deferring some of the cap cost, getting more players right now, because the best way to ensure that he's here long-term is honestly win a Super Bowl, is to get to the Super Bowl. The best way to have him here long-term is to win in the short term.
is Julio Jones, though, the finishing piece? And this is something I thought about last night, because I look at the trade. It's a good trade for Tennessee.
Yeah, it is.
It really is, but it's also not a piece that's going to make Tennessee win the Super Bowl. It's not. They're not going to. I mean, yeah, they have Julio Jones, and they have A.J. Brown, and they have Derrick Henry, and Ryan Tannehill's been playing a lot better. Now, he's going to be playing without Arthur Smith, his offensive coordinator, the last 2 years for the first time, so I think be on the eye for a slight decline at the very least. But they're better on offense, and they still have the worst defense, one of the worst defenses in the NFL. So, okay, great. Your offense is better. Should I be looking at it from that perspective? Because should I look at all trades with the idea that you make a trade if it is the finishing piece? Because for Tennessee, that is not the finishing piece, even though it is a good trade. And I wonder, like, how do you evaluate it a couple of years from now? Is it based off of Jones' individual performance? Is it based off of extra wins that maybe came along the way or moving a little bit further in the playoffs? Because the Titans have been to the AFC Championship game in the last 2 years.
It has to be about making your team a more formidable contender. It has to be about a trade. Any trade that you pull off for a veteran, especially a high-priced veteran, is the, I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today, right? I am trading you my best way at adding young, cost-controlled talent. I'm trading you the most efficient source of labor in the NFL for brand name,
right,
behind the jewelry case. You have to ask someone to unlock it so you can try it on.
Jared, yeah,
right. Like you're, and it better look great from the beginning. It better look great from the beginning. A text on the Mac and Jack's text line from the 425. As name brand as Julio Jones is, we have great wide receivers already. If we are mortgaging our future, I'd hope to do it for a dominant pass rusher, not another wide receiver. That's kind of what you're saying, right, Paul? Which is that, hey, I don't disagree with the idea of let's go for it now. I don't disagree with that idea of let's take on extra cap cost right now without as much an eye toward the long-term future.
Right.
But don't not for a wide receiver. Not for something that we already feel is a strength on this team.
You'd be going from an A to an A+. I mean, it's great, but ultimately, does it matter that much? I always found it interesting, you know, going from high school to college where all of a sudden A+s didn't even exist anymore, where all of a sudden 93 and above is essentially the same grade. Doesn't really help you out that much, ultimately. You know, an A is an A still. You're A at wide receiver. A+, look, it could make you a little bit better, but in the moments where you need to be at your best, you do have some questions on a couple of specific spots in the defense.
I've always thought you're better off improving your strengths rather than shoring up perceived weaknesses. Giving yourself like an over-the-top, this one thing that we're able to do better than anybody else. But the sort of the qualifier is you can't be backbreakingly bad on one side of the ball. You can do that, but you can't be bad on defense. You can be average on defense and be excellent on offense, but you can't be bad. And probably the Chiefs, as Paul's pointed out before, the Chiefs are the best example of that, that they only won the Super Bowl once they got that defense to be at least average. It is Danny and Gallant. We will take a look at Jared Kelnick, exactly what has happened to him, but more what happens next. And maybe a little bit, we found the secret to soccer's appeal in the United States. Some rabid nationalism. We'll explain next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I am curious as to why Russell Wilson decided now that he wanted to show up to OTAs. We saw...
Here he comes to save the day!
We saw, based off of a tweet from our own Jake Heaps, Mighty Mouse, right?
Yeah! Yeah, that's right, Paul!
I get some dated references from time to time.
Shout out to the 90s, baby!
So, what you have is a guy who's going to be back out at practice with the rest of the team. This is good. I don't want to criticize it. I just find it interesting that now he chooses to come. Clearly, he views OTAs as something that have a little bit of value, right? So he's going to show up. That's great. I just wonder why he didn't show up for the first 2 weeks of it.
Yeah, same. I feel the same thing. I don't want to get too bent out of shape about it. Like, I don't want to be like, oh my gosh, this just... But there is like, now you're showing up, huh? So it's of some value, and you're doing some of it. Is it a compromise? I don't. There's a little bit of me that's tough to wrap my head entirely around what all the dynamics are. Was this, hey, we don't want to come the whole time, so what's the best part-time attendance right. that we can work out? And that this is, ultimately, just the whole thing sits weird with me because I have a hard time reconciling February's call for urgency with May's decision that we're going to get ready on our own.
Exactly. I'm having a tough time with that myself. Now, this might be a push by powerful players in the players' union, a move of solidarity. They're not thrilled with the 17th game. They also find the idea of these voluntary but not actually really voluntary workouts to be asking too much of the players. No concessions were given. So there's a good chance that this might have just been an act of solidarity by the players. It's just hard to entirely believe it's just that when you know that Russell Wilson this offseason has shared his feelings on how things have been going over the last couple of years. And there is a part of me that thinks that he is flexing on the Seahawks just a little bit. He had his own workout, his own separate workout, and I do think that he wants people in the organization to know he wants the ability to do things his way, and he is going to take the opportunity to do things his way when he has that chance.
And that's a little part of, because Russ, if Russ had been here, it would have brought more people here, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Like Russ was making that decision. It's about him, but it's also about the team, and it's also about people gravitating around the quarterback. And who did we see that was here? Well, it was all the young guys. And if you had to choose between your veteran receivers, them being, I can see how they say we're getting as much done remotely, but getting time to be with our families, and it's the off season, it was a pandemic. All of those sound totally reasonable. It's just hard for me to compare that to February when it was, hey, I want more urgency and I want to have more say and I don't see why they wouldn't talk to me, to now being, well, okay, I'm employee number three though, and as part of my deal, I can get ready on my own. If I was the coach, then I'd say, well, why am I not just being trusted to handle my end of it then? Or the GM saying, I'll take care of making the decisions on the offensive line, thank you very much, without any oversight from you if you're going to take in
right.
May, that you get to do your own thing.
Exactly. So the inconsistency, it's just something to keep an eye on. Biggest deal in the world? Probably not. It is Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. So, Danny, I got to give you some credit. You are a what? Paul brother addict. You did not purchase the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view boxing match last night, and you saved your $50. Congratulations.
I had no interest in it. Now, don't be careful, because whatever it's going to cost to watch Tyron Woodley fight the other Paul brother, I'm paying that.
Okay.
I'll pay that and watch that, because I think that Tyron Woodley at least has the possibility of absolutely clobbering Jake Paul. But no, I had no interest in watching the other Paul brother
right.
in some sort of boxing fiasco against Floyd Mayweather.
And from what I understand, Floyd did what he always does, which is to keep the fight going. He plays the game of tag that he generally does. And Logan Paul was supposedly gassed by the second round. There's actually this video going viral where it looks like Floyd Mayweather may have knocked Logan out, and he holds
and
him,
held
up.
Him up.
Yeah, and then there's basically a lot of embracing
up,
the rest of the way.
That doesn't make sense, though, because if you're Floyd Mayweather, I don't know why you would hold Logan Paul up. I have no idea why
either.
You would actually not want him to fall down, because it's a better show. Look, I'll say this. If Floyd Mayweather seems to have found the way to make the most money while taking the least possible risk.
Yep.
And this is the culmination of the past 10 years, 15 years of his entire boxing career. The most money possible while actually engaging in, he is now participating, this and the Conor McGregor fight are fights in which there's basically zero risk that he's
right.
going to get beat. And he's going to make a massive amount of money for doing it. And in that regard, kudos to him as a businessman. It's not sporting.
No.
Like there is no
You're right.
Sporting question I had about whether or not Logan Paul was going to be able, even if he's 35 pounds heavier than Floyd Mayweather, how that would come out if they actually boxed.
Boxing got more interest, but at the same time, boxing is just weird. It's in a weird spot. I mean, this is what it has basically come to. So, I mean, if you didn't watch that fight last night, what you should have watched was the CONCACAF Nation League final between the U.S. and Mexico. It was crazy, and I'm mad at myself for not having tuned in. I guess it was on Paramount Plus, where
which
not only Danny, did we see a guy jump behind the Paramount Plus set over an awning and into the crowd and hear, well, the aggressive chants that you typically hear, anti-gay chants that come out of Mexican soccer games. There was a huge population percentage of, I think, Mexico fans at the actual game itself. Trash throwing on the field, actual brawls between players, penalty kicks to win the game, penalty kick saves to win the game for the United States. That actually was the most entertaining sporting event of this weekend, and I don't think it's close. The U.S. taking down Mexico last night.
Turns out what you need to make soccer exceptionally interesting is just some rabid nationalism, which might explain why I am the biggest fan of the World Cup. And I tend to, I watch the Premier League, I watch MLS some, I'm aware of it, but I really love the World Cup. And the Euro, I think Euro 2020, which is now going to happen in 2021 because it was canceled yet, I think it's starting here in the next week or so, which should be very exciting. You get some national identities on the line. Yeah, some good old feistiness. Some good old feistiness happened between two border neighbors.
It's also cool to see the U.S. actually do anything well in men's soccer, seeing as they're, you know, generally an embarrassment, bad, not
they're
as
not,
good as they
They have
to
been
be.
Recently, but like 8 years ago, they made a pretty good run. I think they ended up losing to Ghana.
Yeah, you got to hold them to a higher standard. We're the United States. We have athletes.
Dude, no. Most of our best athletes play actual sports. Like, I understand.
I didn't say that.
I don't have delusions of grandeur when it comes to our place in the global soccer pecking order.
No,
we're
I
better
do.
Than Paraguay. That's cool.
I do. Wow, that's your lowest. That's bogus. You can't have that as a standard. No,
dude,
I'm not allowing
Paraguay's
that.
Paraguay's actually won a World Cup. We haven't won a World Cup.
That is
what Paraguay might be insulted by the insinuation.
I'm insulted that you would have us only go up to be better than Paraguay. My goodness. It's Danny and Gallant. He's Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. By the way, I did not call soccer not a sport. I did not do that. But somebody else on this show did. Up next, Danny's mad at me. Honestly, I'm going to stay mad at him. I'm going to keep this same energy. But he's mad about me and how I have been pushing for Jared Kelnick. You think Kelnick's struggles are my fault? Isn't this crazy? It's Danny and Gallant. Don't go anywhere.